Welcome to Bending the Arc. Bending the Arc is a show sponsored by the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition and produced here on KKRN, KKRN.org community radio. And on this show, we engage in conversations with a really wide range of people working for equal justice in our community, those working within and outside of the criminal legal system. But everyone with deep caring about what that means and how to achieve that for all people. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Michelle Radcliffe Garcia. And I've got a wide range of questions for her. But we'd like to begin, as we always do, with you introducing yourself in whatever is most important for you to share to ground our conversation.
Okay. Dianisa Hestum, Neto Yet Waikai, Neto Yapaitu Yet Michelle, Wintu Ibira, Neto Bos Winamemen Ut Dao Pomen Bos, El Pomen Boda. So thank you. Hi, my name is Walking North. And my English name is Michelle. I am Wintu. My family is from Winamem and Dao Pom. Winamem is a McLeod River area. Dao Pom is a Stillwater area. And I live in Redding. So thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And yeah, that's a great segue into one of the reasons why I wanted to speak with you, your involvement in language revitalization in our community. So I thought we could begin there with you telling people first what is meant when people say language revitalization, and how you got involved in this particular project.
Well, revitalization is bringing our language back into use. We don't currently have any fluent speakers in our language. And I've always been interested in our language since I was a kid. And it just kind of evolved more recently, maybe in the past, maybe 10 years, working with other folks from the Pitt River tribe. They actually had a linguist that would come that used to work with their tribe back in the 70s. And he has started coming again and helping them again. And he would actually stay at our house. And so having a linguist in your own house, it's like I would pick his brain, and they started doing workshops and things. And so I would incorporate Wintu into the same kind of template for what they were doing. So we would work together and kind of come up with ideas and different ways of approaching it. And I've also attended the Breath of Life, which is it's an archival workshop that they have at UC Berkeley. And that was about 10 years ago. And we were able to see all of our language. So they have different groups of Indigenous people that go down, and they can research all the language that other ethnographers or linguists have recorded and kept there at UC Berkeley. And so that really opened my eyes into what other tribes were doing with their language. So couple of years ago in 2022, there was a grant through the United Way. It's the North State Equity Fund grant. And so I applied for that. And that's kind of what started it. Because I kind of felt like I was doing it on my own as for Wintu. Because the Pitt River had a group. And for us, we didn't really have a lot of people. There were people that were interested, but as far as actually like teaching it and getting it going, there weren't. But when I did the grant, we started, I was lucky enough to find a linguist that we could work with. And so, and there were more people that were interested. So we started doing Zoom classes and going to, we went to a conference in Oregon, and a lot more people were interested. So now there's a core group of about 10 of us. We continue to do the Zoom classes. We, I organized a trip down to UC Berkeley that, because they didn't get to go to those Breath of Life workshops, and like, I wanted them to experience it. And so we all went down, and it was really eye-opening for folks. Really brought up a lot of emotions.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering if you could speak to what one experiences at a conference like that. Like, so I'm guessing that there weren't necessarily sessions on Wintu language or different Wintu languages, but ways of learning, perhaps, or how to recover what's out there. What do you find at a conference, and what was moving for you?
Well, at the Breath of Life, they would help us to see where things were kept, so we can go and research where our language was kept. And we were fortunate enough, there's two actual Wintu dictionaries, and other tribes don't have dictionaries. So that is a big bulk of the things. And then we also have recordings down there. And it's just very emotional when you first like hear it, if you haven't heard it before. And when I was growing up, my grandma would speak and teach me some, not a whole lot, but for other folks, they had never heard it before. And so it was just very emotional. And for them to be able to learn words and to speak, you know, and teach their kids and be able to just write about the emotion of it, because it's like a whole new world has opened up to them, you know, of remembering who they are.
It sounds like there's all kind of emotions there. The memory of your grandmother, the experience for them, and the world that's opening up, and just that remembering who you are. That's such a powerful way of framing it.
Yeah. And it feels like a big responsibility too, you know, because there aren't speakers. And so just working with the linguist has been very helpful, because even as a speaker, you know, you might not necessarily know all the grammar parts of it. You just say it the way you say it, because that's how you learn how to say it.
Right, you know? Right.
So it's interesting. There's a lot to it. Even the dictionaries I mentioned, there's different ways that the linguists used to write it. And then other ethnographers used kind of their own way sometimes. So that's another project that we're working on, is having one database where we can incorporate all the different research documentation, so that we can, maybe it's in one dictionary, maybe not the other. Or just the differences in the bands, the dialects also. So there's a lot to it, you know, that people might not really think about.
Yeah. For example, the dialects, what have you learned about how many dialects they are or how different they are from each other?
A lot of it is very similar, but Trinity County, the Naramuk, their dialect, some words are different. And then we also have southern cousins that they're the Nomlaki. They're, a lot of the words are similar, but then some are different too. So,
And is that accent similar?
The accent usually is, it's more difference in the actual words. Yeah.
It, you know, when you were telling me that earlier, I lived in the Comoros Islands for 6 or 7 months, and very small islands, but the languages were significantly different. There was a Bantu Swahili root, but two of the islands could communicate and the third could understand but couldn't be understood. It was very fascinating how even geographically very close and isolated from so many things, language can differ so much with all of the implications of that.
Yeah.
How, and this is an imprecise question, but, you know, your grandmother spoke, how much were you able to speak before diving into this project?
I knew words and some phrases, but mostly just words.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of our family would use those words. And of course, you always learn the bad words.
Of course.
Yeah. So not a lot, but I did learn how to read the dictionary, because some people would have the dictionary and didn't understand the way that the linguists wrote it, because saying the word and then seeing it in print, you know, because it wasn't a written language, but then having to be able to read it, it's like a whole different thing. You have to like switch your mind to be able to read it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and uses, it's a whole person experience learning a language like that, especially one that's, you can't just turn on the TV or radio and, you know, immerse yourself in it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier, you know, remembering who you are. And I'm guessing there are a lot of people who would be listening to this who, you know, it's one thing to learn a language of your ancestors. My great aunts, my dad spoke French at home until he was about 7. And that was his mother tongue for sure. And I learned French so I could learn what they were saying. And I married into a family where they all spoke Spanish, and I learned, and it was a different experience, but that's very different from learning what was your core language. So I wonder how you explain to people the importance of that, what that means on a heart level, as our mutual acquaintance CJ says. You know, what that means to learn something that was part of your family for generations.
Well, I think it helps to empower us as Native people. I feel like it connects us to our ancestors. And because there's a whole, I don't know how much people know about boarding schools and stuff, but language and culture were pretty much wiped out as much as they tried, you know, to assimilate us. So it's, it feels good in so many ways, you know, for our spirit, for our self-image, for our lineage, for our children to be able to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to give them strength and empower them. And just knowing is also our place in the community, you know, the place names, the areas, the location, you know, it ties us to the land, you know, with the place names. And it's just, a whole different way of looking at things, you know, using our language from our perspective.
Mm-hmm. And I know for listeners who aren't aware, when I have in my sociology classes taught students about boarding schools and children being forcibly removed from their homes and not being able to use their language or songs or dress and having to cut their hair. And, you know, I often get a sense from some students like, oh, that was so long ago. And, you know, I'm wondering if you could share how recent and how, what an impact that legacy has today.
Well, it's my grandma, she was born in 1906, and she went to a boarding school for a time, but then the boarding school burned down. She went to Greenville, and it burned down, and so she went back to regular school. So it was fortunate, you know, that she was able to come back. I don't know exactly how long she was there, but just think of all of the families. I mean, you have so many other relatives that went to Chamawa. I actually went to Chamawa later on, but that was by my choice. I wasn't forced to go there. It's kind of a different story. But if you think about it in historically, you know, how it affects one child and it affects their children and all the generations after them. You know, trying to take that culture out of them, and so many things that were lost in doing that, all those generations down the line not only have to deal with that trauma that it caused, but also have to fight even harder just to know who they are.
I've heard you and others talk about, you know, the importance of this project. It's, you know, language as a keeper of culture, as something that sustains people. And it carries so much within it. You know, your son, Sky, was talking about his fascination with how you can see a worldview in a language that you're studying anew. You know, the language you wind up speaking, that your parents spoke, that you grow up speaking, there's so much we take for granted in about the worldview in that language, right? And it can be easier to see it when you're learning. And so I'm wondering if there were things that you began to see differently or realize or appreciate as you learned some of that structure or new words about Wintu worldview.
One thing that I think is unique about Wintu is that when you tell someone something, you can tell just by like the suffix, certain suffixes that are added to the word, how you came to know that. Did you, like, if you tell somebody it's raining, it's like they would know that you see that it's raining, or you surmise that because someone came in from outside and they're wet. So you determine that it's raining because of that, or like because someone told you that it's raining, you know, if you're inside or whatever. So there's all that information like in one little word, you know, and it has helped me to, I guess, in the way that I speak English, think about being more precise in how I came to know that information, which is kind of weird because sometimes I'll be vague because I don't know for sure, you know, about something. Mm-hmm. And you know how little kids are, my niece and my granddaughter because I didn't see it with my own eyes, then I'm vague about it, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of interesting how your brain kind of thinks in both ways, you know, and it translates from English to Wintu thinking, you know?
Yeah. Well, and as a researcher, so that's, you know, that's my background. What's fascinating to me about that is that there's a level of both authenticity or, you know, you here, I'm sharing this information, but I'm telling you where I got it too. So you're able to evaluate, you know, like maybe I have more, it's more valid because I actually saw it. Was there anything that, I don't know, that surprised you in a way that you didn't expect?
Sometimes just going through the dictionary, I get so sidetracked looking stuff up. but just some of the ways of saying things or like not curses, but ways of kind of like being mean about something. Some of the things that are said, it's like, oh, my God, is in it. It could be kind of I don't know. It's interesting.
Kind of like phrases of like how you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm from the South, and when I did one of my research projects, there was this preacher I interviewed for some reason, and he said phrases I'd never remembered hearing, and you know, things like she was like death eating crackers, and I was like, you know, and that's kind of quite the visual, right? Like it, or you know, that's about as useful as a one-arm paper hanger, or like being in a coffin with both ends cut off. Yeah, and that kind of sort of visual, playful, visceral language does say a lot about culture and relationships. So you mentioned place names earlier, and I know we have somebody in our steering committee who has been bringing up that issue more, and he identifies both as Latinx but has indigenous roots is how he describes it, and he's been bringing up in meetings with some of the newer members of the Board of Supervisors who we've been speaking with, place names in our county that are, the words are derogatory terms considered mm-hmm. to be offensive. So I'm wondering how you explain the impact of that and the importance of working to change that for the benefit of all people.
Yeah. It's nice to have people looking at those and considering changing those. And coming to Indigenous people to offer maybe our term for that place.
Mm-hmm.
It's just disheartening when seeing things and hearing things because they're derogatory terms, you know, and it's just like being called those things when you hear it all the time. And so it's, I feel like it's being more respectful, at least, you know, but taking, I mean, with all like the land acknowledgements and stuff like that, that is a land acknowledgement, you know, you're acknowledging, okay, that land, but wait, what's it called? Oh. That doesn't sound right, you know, and so people are kind of waking up to what is more appropriate and respectful, and it's like, oh, maybe we should change those, you know,
mm-hmm.
So it's been good. There's still a lot that still need to be changed, you know, it's kind of like the statues that, a lot of the statues that came down, you know,
mm-hmm.
that represented colonists or, people that led genocide, you know, there's, yeah. So it's good to have that, those names changed.
This period where things that different sides of the political spectrum using the same terms, but in very different ways. You know, so for example, My Body, My Choice was a pro-choice and then was used for anti-vaccine, you know, kind of things. And seeing this whole idea about examining history, you know, which when I was growing up was, you know, let's be open-eyed about what really happened and what it means about what we need to do now and how we want to live moving forward. And now it seems like there's a contingent of people who say, well, we don't want to ignore history when they mean we should keep that place name the same or we should keep that statue up, even though that history is much shorter.
I always think of it as the conqueror's history, his story. That's their history, you know, but to look at it, like you said, look beyond that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It also strikes me when you were talking about being called certain names and how challenging it appears to be for some people who have not been on the receiving end of both micro and macro aggressions and straight on discrimination or racism, how hard it seems to be to empathize with what that experience like, even though we have a lot of research on the physical health impact, you know, much less the emotional, you know, spiritual impact.
I mentioned earlier that I went to Chamala Indian School. It's a boarding school in Oregon, Salem, Oregon. And that was in the 80s. The reason I went there, when I was in high school, I had a conflict with my history teacher because he was not willing to change or see things in any different way than what was in the textbook. And what is it? In the textbooks, you know, is not, it's very one-sided and it glosses over Indian history. You know, it might be one sentence or one paragraph, at least then. And so that changed the whole trajectory of my life. You know, I made a different choice based on who I was. Mm-hmm. And because I wanted to be around other Native people, that was my reason for going. And because they were going to make me go to a continuation high school, which there's nothing wrong with continuation high school, but that I don't feel like they were going to make me paint the walls or wash the walls or something. I forgot now, but I was very, I didn't think that was right. And I think a lot of Native kids were railroaded into continuation high school and already have had issues, you know, dealing with trying to fit in and do things. But having a teacher, someone that is administrative, you know, not seeing you for who you were could really affect you. You know?
Yeah, no. And long term, it's, you know, you talked about that historical, intergenerational, you know, trauma. And we see in the education system today those inequities, the suspension, you know, we get reports even in California, the suspension rates at kindergarten.
Oh, yeah.
Right? By race. And yeah, that bias, implicit or not, to interpret behavior in a particular way. You know, that's one of the things I think that really concerns me about some of the pushback against social emotional learning that's happening in our county too, is that, you know, we've learned to look at behavior and wonder, well, what's going on at home? And did they eat? And are they scared? Or did they just lose a parent or a grandparent? Like those contextual things are really important in how a child processes things, especially if you don't have that ability to belong and see yourself reflected in your peers and a teacher and value ways of learning.
Yeah. It really affects, especially, you know, in high school. High school is tough for anyone, you know, and they have to deal with all those other issues, you know. It's it makes it really hard.
So what was it like going there for you? How did it feel being?
I liked it. I met the students were from all over, you know, many different states. And I was into sports, so I really enjoyed the sports. And they kept us really busy doing extracurricular activities. And I made lifelong friends there, you know. It was a good experience for me.
You know, when we touched earlier on changing the names of places that are derogatory terms, you mentioned land acknowledgements. And so I'm wondering if you see that move as also important, or just how you think about that.
Yeah, I do. And I think it's... It's kind of twofold, though. It's first of all, it's good that people are recognizing that and doing land acknowledgements. But then it's kind of like some people I feel are just doing it to do it because other people are doing it. But what does it really mean? It's like going beyond just land acknowledgement, you know, and like in some places, like over on the coast, I know they do like an honor tax because they are on Wiat land. And so people choose to do an honor tax where they, you know, do kind of a kickback for the tribe just because it's like a giving back or... I feel like it's a way of, what is the term? Making things right, you know? They may not be the specific ones that did it, but they know that there was a wrong done to the people from that land. And so that's a way of, not making it right, but putting effort into it, you know, more thoughtful effort.
Yeah.
And there's ways of doing that, you know, and that's one of the ways. And not just saying stuff at a surface level, you know?
Right. So less performance, not reparations per se, but an honoring. I know that we worked with several people in creating a land acknowledgement for the SEJC, but we, you know, always say that it's a remembrance and it's acknowledgement. It's a start, not a checkbox, you know, thing of itself. And we used also a labor acknowledgement. And one of the things within that labor acknowledgement is just the recognition of how wealth is passed down or not. And that even though, you know, maybe your ancestors didn't own slaves or you weren't here in this land, but you have still profited from those practices. It sounds like that's what you're saying, that regardless of who's here now, some people's really profited from the way things were and others did not. Yes. both in level of, you know, privilege and health and wealth and all kinds of things.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's kind of a just a way of like leveling things up, you know, because a lot of us are mixed, you know, but it's like, I always go, when I go to a new place, I think about the ancestors of that land. And I always think of my ancestors, and when people come to this land and we try to welcome people. But also it's nice when people come to a land to ask to be there, to state their intention for being there, you know? And it's like visiting someone, like if you were to go into their home. I mean, it's being respectful of their ways. And that's just how I see it. It's just generational. That I think that should continue, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, when you're saying that, it makes me think, and being honest and transparent about intention is even more important because of the history of stolen lands and boarding schools and all of the trust that's been broken. Certainly that's something that, you know, the SEJC works with on a number of different levels, broken, both recognizing and trying to be part of the process of facilitating rebuilding of trust where that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to have relationships or change without trust.
Right.
What are some, and this can be within the language revitalization movement or outside of it, some of the promising practices. I don't mean that in a, you know, kind of nonprofit-y kind of way. that term often gets used, but things that are promising that give you hope that are happening to lead to conditions that are more equitable.
Well, I don't know. I think about kind of what we always do, you know, within our cultural, you know, like our ceremonies and our activities, cultural activities and things like that. as far as like interacting with city or county or, I mean, some things have changed, but I think there needs to be a lot deeper changes and not just surface things. So, I mean, there's a little bit of effort, but, again, it's kind of like, I hope it goes beyond just surface things, you know,
mm-hmm.
The renaming of the places and I think it's really important for us as Native people to have a place to, when people come here and they look around, that they know there's a Native presence here, because there's so few of us. Mm-hmm. Whenever I go somewhere to another community, I look around and see, are there any Native people here, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you don't see the Native people because there's so few of them, if you look around, do you see it in the art? Do you hear it on the radio? How do you know that they're there? And that's what I think, that's what's important. And I think that needs to happen a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
In the county, in the city, there are different groups that are working on like equality and things. And I think it's very important. And I just hope that it builds, you know, and more people are make it a priority, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, when we were originally talking about this, there's certainly within those who are concerned about equal justice, regardless of race and identity, you know, things that come up with respect to Native communities are high incarceration rates, you know, disproportionate for Native peoples, the ongoing impact of the large number of cases of murdered and missing Indigenous women and people. Those are all heavy burdens and have a huge impact on both the sense that justice can be achieved, as well as the need for attention to some of those root causes, and realizing that you're not, you know, when we were talking before, experts in either of those, but you are certainly so involved through your work, paid and unpaid, with a range of people who interact with multiple systems.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering what you see as some of the key issues, the priorities that if you were in charge of everything, you would get people to address.
I don't know. I think maybe if there's like a task force that could, you know, for the missing and murdered Indigenous people that have more listening sessions, maybe with the community, you know. I think that like think tanks would be very helpful with a lot of the issues that affect Native people. It's like we have to go and be heard, and we have to make time to have our voices heard. And there's so few of us. If it would be really nice if different agencies, you know, that handle these types of things were to offer to have like a task force of Native individuals, Native tribal members, federally recognized and non-federally recognized, to listen to the issues of the people, you know, to have that interest and to come to us and ask for suggestions and ideas, and, you know, to actually follow through with some of those, you know, try to work together with us and meet with us, and not when in the heat of the moment when something is happening, you know.
Right.
When there's, because there's so many things can get heated and get like out of control, you have to deal with things in a calm environment when everyone can come to the table, you know, and have a place at the table.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like another one of our steering committee says, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
You're on the menu, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, when you're bringing up both the importance of listening to truly understand, and the other important thing I really want to call out is, and working with us for solutions, not to you know, listen and then do something on your own, you know, like, but
exactly.
Right.
Yes. Capacity. Which just adds to the mistrust.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Don't tell us one thing and then do something else. You know, that's, it's like, like, when are they ever going to get it?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, in some of the listening sessions that I've been involved with for a local master plan for aging, that's, you know, it's always striking. There's some people who are like, we need a program for, but often it's like, it's, can you could you possibly change the eligibility of that so my daughter could go with me? Or could we look at housing solutions that recognize we have extended family, you know, multi-generational families, or you know, like removing barriers more often is an issue, or thinking about entry into something different, not necessarily, you know, can you build a complex over here?
And it kind of, to me, I think back to language, it's a different way of thinking, you know?
Yes.
Certain people might think one way and other people think a totally different way. You know, let's put our heads together and try to figure out the best for everyone.
Yeah. 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 That is another real, I was going to say gift, but so core about understanding the lenses that a language gives you. There's a social psychologist who's been writing a lot on how, say, from the right and left, people are holding on to totally different values. And so they, even though at the, if you got to the core of, I want my family to be healthy, I want to be able to be, you know, loved and to make a living. You know, like when you go far down enough, there's not as much difference, but it's so easy to talk past each other when we're using different ways of thinking. And there certainly are indigenous ways of knowing that that look at things very differently from the Western way that many who go through the public school system here learn.
Yeah.
You know, that issue of being federally recognized or not is something also that I have found when I've been in community groups and pointed to that difference that not everyone fully appreciates. And Winnemenwintu is not currently a federally recognized tribe. Correct.
No, and neither is the Wintu tribe of Northern California, which is the tribe I'm enrolled in.
Mm-hmm.
There are many tribes that are not federally recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some of which have been, and then it was
recently. Right. Yeah. Just all of a sudden, now you're not.
Kind of arbitrary.
Yeah. Yes.
So can you summarize for people what that means, the difference? That the impact that it can have?
Well, if for federally recognized tribes, they have a government to government relationship with the United States, which opens up federal funding. What else? Just the sovereignty, being able to protect sacred sites. Being able to be a voice for the people, because some, like a lot of agencies don't even recognize, well, goes back to the word recognize. They don't even like come to tribes that aren't federally recognized. That's the only one. Oh, you're not on this list. Then we're not even going to talk to you, let alone listen to what you have to say. Mm-hmm. It's like, it takes away our voice in a sense, you know, and there are federal laws like ICWA, Indian Child Welfare Act, that protects our Native children and make sure that if they are taken out of the home, that they do get to go to Indian homes. But for us, it's a fight to have that, happen in the same way, you know, that it should happen for us. So it's like another layer of a battle, you know, for non-recognized people. And, as a cultural bearer, I think that we have knowledge and traditions and ways of doing things, whereas maybe federally recognized tribes are more of a a government, more of a, their focus might be more economic development and other things. So I think agencies, city, county agencies should listen to all natives, not just federally recognized tribes. That's why I suggest the think tank, you know, that is made up, like I mentioned, of, you know, recognized and non-recognized and individuals. There are individuals that aren't enrolled in tribes, but they are native, you know. They have just as much voice, you know. A lot of those people hold so much culture and knowledge, you know, but it's their choice not to enroll, you know, for whatever their specific reasons are. But yeah.
Well, and you're circling back to just that critical role of honoring, of lifting up culture bearers, of the important role that not only language, but art and dance and music, all of those things reflect and hold and celebrate and strengthen culture, that I think, you know, a broad stroke U.S. culture doesn't necessarily appreciate. I know growing up in New Orleans, in the New Orleans area, that was something that was so much part of my life, and living in other areas, it certainly exists, but was, you know, I'm not sure, it just didn't seem to be given as much weight.
Yeah. Yep. The community is, you know, a strength, you know, the Native community and, you know, the ceremonial families, you know, the, it's just, yeah, it's like kind of like different dimensions of, people, life. I don't know. It's,
Well, Michelle, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about that I didn't ask you about, or that's important to say in the context of this conversation?
Just that I know who I am as a Native person, as an Indigenous person, that regardless if the United States recognizes us or not, I know who I am, and I am resilient. The tribe is resilient. Native people are resilient. We've gone through many things, and we are still here. And I think we continue to thrive and appreciate those that listen to us as a people, just like, you know, we listen to others and welcome others and try to work with people for the best outcome for us as human beings. And just that we will never give up. And also I wanted to mention, we will be having a Indigenous art show coming up in June. If anyone's interested, it will be at the Shasta County Arts Council, Old City Hall, for the whole month of June, opening up that first Friday. And it's called Chali Po, which means sacred fire. And that's what I think continues to keep us going, is that sacred fire, that community and that ceremony.
That's a beautiful place to end. And I'll definitely put that out even before this episode airs. to share with people. And we'll also put in the show notes ways that people can support your work.
Yeah, we're working on getting our nonprofit status for the Wintu Language Circle. And we are working on a website. We haven't gotten there yet. We have an Instagram and an email, which I can send to you.
That would be great. That would be great. Yeah. We'll put it on our social media too.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity.
These times are poignant, the winds have shifted. It's all we can do to stay uplifted. Pipelines through backyards, wolves howling out front. Yeah, I got my crew, but truth is what I want. Realigned and on point, power to the peaceful. Prayers to the waters, women at the center. All vessels open to give and receive. Let's see the system brought down to its knees. Whoa, oh, 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 whoa, whoa, oh, oh, whoa, 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 Father taught me that I'm a speck of dust and this world was made for me. So let's go and try our luck. I've got my roots down, 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 down.